You're listening to Selling the Dream. This isn't an interview, and we're not journalists. But each week, we'll ask our guests to open up and share their secrets to business success. Let's have a conversation and have some fun.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Selling the Dream, the podcast for people who are interested in listening to others talk about leadership, sales, entrepreneurship. I wonder if podcasting is like when the kids watch other kids play video games on YouTube. Like, I don't know if you've seen that, Joe.
Oh, yeah.
Like, literally, kids watch videos of other kids playing video games.
Yeah, be careful. My son does that.
It's crazy, but here we are. We're just talking, and we expect other people to watch us.
Yeah, it is. It is ridiculous. Was I supposed to start talking yet, or no? Were we going to introduce?
I don't know. There's really only two rules here.
I'm like, I got to say something because I got to contribute because I get on my son about this all the time. Like, dude, you're making somebody else make money.
Yes.
That they're playing the game. They're getting great at it. I said, but now you're watching him play. And they're making money off of you watching them play as they play.
It's kids in general, man. Kids these days are just lazy. Like when we were kids, it's true. Kids would run away.
I agree.
Ever seen runaways? There's no runaways anymore. They're lazy. No. There used to be no milk carton. You don't see that.
Well, what's funny about that is that because when we ran away, we thought there was possibly a better life, and there probably was.
But more importantly,
there's no better life.
We took the initiative to run away. These kids don't run away anymore. That's a major
belt
with these kids these days. You know, have some
balls. They will never know the brief freedom of running away till about 11 o'clock at night. We're like, now what am I going to do?
Yeah, then fear sets in. Then fear sets in. That's right.
Well, this episode got shot out of a cannon, didn't it?
That's right, man.
So here we go, everybody. I want to introduce and say hello to my good friend Joe Iredell, coming to us from, as always, from Carlsbad, California.
Sure.
Joe, how are you? It's good to see you.
It's good to be seen, man. Good to be seen.
How's the dog and the rabbit getting along?
Bro, they're frenemies. Let's put it that way. They're curious of each other. And then they try to like hang and get close, and then one gets like a straight jab to the snout, and then we got to start all over again. So it's cool. Well, it turns out the dog is fiercely protective of my wife and daughters. So
that's good.
That's good until they weaponize the dog against my sons. So
that's been happening.
There's been some fake distress that has sent the dog like a missile into my son's chest.
Wow.
So it's, yeah.
Oh, it's cool, man. You gotta love it, dude. You gotta love it.
Just nothing crazy.
We have an awesome show today. I've been looking forward to this for a while now. Again, Selfish KJ, that's me. I'm selfish, and I bring people onto the show that I want to ask questions of and out of my own pure curiosity. But today is a super cool episode because today we have, if you heard that third voice on the show so far, it's Brad Weissman. Brad is the associate broker and co-owner of Keller Williams Platinum Realty in Wyomissing, which, by the way, very well may be near our buddy Scott Bailey, who owns Bailey Septic Services.
Oh, my God, Scott.
Wait, Scott. You know Scott.
Scott. I love Scott. He just bailed me out of a shitty situation recently.
Ah.
So you obviously know it's who I'm talking about when I say that.
Yeah,
no,
absolutely.
But seriously, he's a great guy. He literally did just bail me out of something recently. He's my go-to. I always say he knows his shit, which he does. He's just incredible. There's nobody knows more about septic systems in this area than he does.
And that was not a planned plug either for anyone listening. Scott's our boy from the Yellow Book days.
Yep.
Over to family business up in your neck of the woods.
Yeah, I
ride motorcycles with Scott, and we had some interesting times at Bike Week down in Myrtle Beach. Okay. So
was he always into sewage, or was it just something that happened later on in life?
Family business.
He started the Yellow Pages, and his family owned the septic service, and then he took over
and his brother was in it too. His brother was in the septic business.
Yes.
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 That's right.
I actually talked to Scott not that long ago.
Yeah, I just literally was on the phone with him, I think a week and a half ago. I had a situation with a septic system that was, not that it was failing, but there was an issue with it. And I need another opinion. Because sometimes, you know, when the inspector goes out there and they're looking at the septic, you want to make sure that they're not just trying to sell you stuff.
Yeah.
You know, because that can be the situation. So when you bring in a third party like Scott, who has no attachment, no gain, no nothing from it, he just tells you this is what it is and this is right. It turned out the guy that did the original inspection was a buddy of his also. So he probably was getting paid off on the side somewhere.
Well, if you catch up with him and he gives you any stories about us at Yellow Book, they are all lies. Every single one of them are lies. Never convicted.
Yet.
Yeah, all lies. But more to the point, and you brought up septic, and I'm glad you brought that up. You've been in the real estate business now since 1992, if I'm not mistaken. So you've been at this game, which is odd. You don't look old enough. And I said this when we met. You don't look old enough to be in this business since 1992. So congratulations.
We have a special young camera that we use for me. That's you might want to look into it, you know, because you might be able to need it soon.
It's a filter.
I'm not sure. Yeah, it's built-in young camera is what it is. Yeah, it works really well. But no, seen a lot of stuff. 33 years in the business since 1992, and absolutely still love it.
So I guess give me just a little background on your progression from what got you interested in real estate sales, and then more importantly, I would like to talk a little bit about your progression into sales leadership and your thoughts on that.
I got into it in 92. I was 22 years old. It was one of those things where I have done other things like writing music and singing and performing and being in the entertainment business. And it was not providing the payroll that I was hoping for. Mm-hmm. And my dad said, you know, if this isn't going to work for you, you got to find something else as a backup. And he had suggested sales. Now, at that point, when he suggested that, I had a ponytail that was at the center of my back, and I had earrings, many of them, and I was not really the one that you would think would be selling real estate. So I got into the business in that way. I used to tuck my ponytail in the back of my, remember, I don't know if you guys remember this, the gold jackets that Century 21 agents used to wear.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I had a gold jacket, ugly as it was, but I did. And I used to sneak my ponytail down the back of that jacket so that the first impression of me was without that. I took the earrings out and I had my hair all slicked back and it would be in the back of a ponytail. So they just thought it was slicked back look. But what's funny is as people would be talking to me, I'd see them start to go like this and like look to see. And then they come back and I'm like, you know, but at least the first impression was already over.
Yeah.
And at least got me that.
Business in the fucking party in the back.
You got that right. There was a lot of freaking party in the back. It's the way it was. And then eventually just kept my hair shorter and shorter. And, I thought this was going to be something to fall back on. I thought this was going to be a, you know, back then we didn't use the word dual career. It was going to be, you know, a second thing that I did. I got my first paycheck, my first commission check and went, holy shit, this is unbelievable.
Tell me what it was.
It's fun. It probably was like $800. I'm serious, but
back in 92,
but it was a lot more money.
I'll buy a lot of pool table tickets back in 92, man.
Yeah, I mean, $800 is a lot of money, you know? So,
hold on. Let me stop you there because, again, I told you it was going to happen. I tell you it was going to happen. And then we start talking, Scott Bailey, you know, dogs chasing after Joe's kids. I forgot to do two truths and a lie. Remember I told you?
Oh, yeah, that's all right. I thought it was towards the end. That's why I wasn't.
No, we got to start with it and then we'll finish with it. That's the whole thing. All right.
Sounds good.
So I put a pin in your commission check. That's what we're going to pick up when we do the commission check. But for everyone listening, Brad's going to give us two truths, one lie, and by the time the show's over, Joe's going to try and figure out which one's the lie, and his track record is about 50-50 at this point.
Okay.
He came out starting off strong, but it's about 50-50. So, all right, so what is fact number one?
I was at a Super Bowl.
You were at a Super Bowl?
Yep.
Okay. Fact number two.
I met Carly Simon.
Fact number three.
I was born with one testicle.
You know, we have a guy on the show that has three nipples. So
that's
All right. Born with one testy. Got it.
Okay.
Wow. All right, Joe. Good luck with that one, my man.
One less than Jamie Lee Curtis was born with, so.
That's funny.
All right. Back to, all right, so you're in this business. You get this whopping $700, $800 commission check. You're like, wow, this is, I could do this all day. So how did it go from there?
You know, and then it just was, what was amazing is that I put in the effort, I put in the time, put in the work, and there was a nice reward. And I had done that for probably 6 years in music. And the reward was internal, which was great. But internal rewards don't always pay the bills. So this was a big thing for me. And I also got a high off of it. And it was the only thing in life besides music that really gave me that, like, wow, this, I'm liking this. This is something good. And I kept doing it. And more music, not that music ever will fade out of my life. You know, it's part of me, always has been. Unlike that other testicle. But you know, that is, it's just, you know, it's the way it is. It's part of my soul. So it's always going to be there. But this has now become, you know, something I love to do. And then with passion and love and wanting to serve, it just kept going and never thought I'd be where I am today. Doing this. I was supposed to be a rock star. That didn't happen so much, but it's okay. Yeah.
They say selling is a drug. Why do you think that? Because I agree. I mean, I've experienced it. I've felt it. I mean, me and Joe, when we were at Yellow Page sales, man, we crushed it.
Yeah, dude. If you can sell Yellow Book, you can sell anything.
That's what my father-in-law said, and that's why I'm in the mortgage business today.
Yeah, it's so true.
So, why do you think that is?
Why do you think about the high from it, or do you think the thrill?
First of all, let me ask you this: do you think it's certain people get high from selling? Get that rush, or do you think that if only everyone had a chance to feel it, they'd all feel it? Like, do you think it's a personality thing?
Oh, I think it's definitely a personality thing, but I also think it is. Let's just say it's 50-50, and you got to remember, I didn't know what I was going to feel when I did my first sale. I didn't know there was another passion other than music, because I did music from the time I was 7 years old. So, you know, you don't know what you don't know. It's such an easy statement, such a weird statement, but it's a true statement. Mm-hmm. If I didn't experience chocolate cake, I would never like chocolate cake. You know, so I think if people would be open to the opportunity and the possibility, or open to the possibility of an opportunity, let's put it that way, I think people would become more wholesome, experience more things. And maybe really find something that they do at a much higher level than what they're doing right now. You know,
do you think it's the fear of the unknown? People are their familiarity equals their safety. So like, even though this thing could be out there for them, and let the salespeople, especially production, you know, they don't like a real estate agent doesn't go from 4 to 8, not because they don't have the aptitude or the ability. It's a lot of times I wonder is it because they're just afraid of what it might take to get to 8, and they assume all these things.
Absolutely. I think it's more like writer's block, like where you have there's enough sales tools. There's enough sales strategies out there. There's enough like execution that you could learn or someone can tell you. But like when it comes down to like, all right, now I'm going to put the pen to paper and start writing, or like put the plan in action. I think then people, like, it's really difficult to take that next step to do it. And even with like cold calling, like the first call is the hardest call to make, you know? I think that's where, and then people get distracted and they're like, oh, it's not for me or whatever. So to the point of like, yeah, it's like the unknown is because you just don't want to like take that first step. But I think sales is addictive because I equate it a lot to like sports, and like it's the one career path that you can take, or one of the career paths you can take, where like you can actually train and you can have a strategy and you can execute and you get like an instant result of whether it worked or it didn't work. And then you can refine and get better. So you're getting either like instantaneous wins or instantaneous losses. And like, you know, the, you get high on the wins and you change the process. So that for me, I think that that's what hooks people is like, how do I keep getting more and more and getting that first high that I got? So,
yeah, I agree. And I think once you do feel it, if you have it in you and that's something that you can feel, then it, yeah, then it becomes very addictive. And it's funny, you know, I'm actually thinking of it now. This, I got to write this down for myself then later. But
you I'll know, send you the show notes.
You talk about, yeah, that's right. I'm going to have this anyway, but you said about, we talk about fear of the unknown. How about this? How about if we switch it to opportunity of the unknown? If we look at it, if we take the word fear out of it and we call it opportunity or possibility of the unknown, it changes the whole way that we look at anything that is different or anything that's new. The other thing that's interesting too, everything, and I'm sure you guys are listening to the same stuff I'm listening to, but everything you're listening to now is that if you think that you're going to know it all before you jump, you're crazy. The knowing and the knowledge and the success is in the action. It's not before the action. It's in the action. And I think a lot of us, because of that fear of the unknown, never make it to the action. Does that make sense?
This goes back to the age we've had such a long running argument about entrepreneurship and how if you can learn it or you can't learn it. And and we had a guest on, it was like the dean of the entrepreneur school. And I said, how do you know who's an entrepreneur? Is it because they fail every class and then they pass one? And it's like the people who are A students are the worst, in my opinion, to start a business because they have to get everything right. And it's like,
so true.
I've told people, I actually like just recently, I have a buddy of mine. He's works for a pretty big HVAC company and he's crushes it there, but he's always complaining. I'm like, dude, go start. You have every skill set to start your own business. Just do it. And like, it's mind boggling because it's like, well, I got to do this. I got to like, no, you don't like just start. Like you're not going to know anything. So you do it. And like trying to impress upon people that if you develop the skill sets to handle situations, then like that's what's going to help you in business. It's not the knowledge of the business that you're getting into. It's your confidence in the fact that you have the skill sets to solve issues as they come up and, you know, handle them as they go. But like, that's the,
so on with that.
It's like, ah, but yeah.
Yeah, and I agree with that 100%. You know, I was thinking about this morning for, you know, I'm working on a book right now. It's about relationships and trust and stuff like that. That's hopefully it could be out in about a year. I'm just starting into the whole process and ghostwriters and all that stuff. So, you know, one of the things that I was thinking about this morning was like, look at my dad. Okay, my dad did the same thing, HVAC business actually. And 25 years ago, he was sick of working for, he was in HVAC sometime when he was 18 years old. So 25 years ago, he's in his, he's 77. So let's just say in his 50s, he decided, he's just getting fed up. And I had told him so many times, like, start your own business. Dad, you have every skill set. You're running and making profits for a business as the general manager. The only difference is that you're not the one, you're not signing the checks on the front. You know what I mean? You're not signing the checks on the front. You're signing them on the back. And I said, you know what I did? I bought my dad a book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And by Robert Kiyosaki, this is 25, 30 years ago. It made a huge impression on me. And I had been self-employed and I had been working on my own since I'm 22. So here I am as the son saying, Dad, you got to do this. You got to do this. They're now the number one HVAC company in our county and surrounding counties. They're called Comfort Pro, little plug for them. But you know, they do an amazing job. And it's only, it was because of, you know, he finally jumped off that cliff and found his way on the way down. And it's just amazing. And it's the same kind of thing. People have all these skills. They have all the knowledge, everything. They just don't act. You know, the action is where it's all at. And you were just saying about, you know, I never heard anybody say it before that the A student is not the one that you want to look for to run the company. And you're right, because they wait to get everything right. And this is nothing against A students. My kids watch this and go, hey, what about the A? What about the C's I'm getting that you're all upset about? You know what I mean? It's not that. It's just that there tends to be. It's not 100%. There tends to be. I mean, I was not a good student. You know, I definitely wasn't. But I also, it's a survival thing. If you don't have it here, you got to find it somewhere else.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. That's what they said. I saw some statistic or something about, like, I don't know. I don't like statistics, but a large majority or a large amount of CEOs are like dyslexic or have like learning disabilities and things like that.
Absolutely.
Like, to that point,
and that's true.
If you can't do it, if you have to figure it out a different way, that in itself is a skill set that is applicable to everything you do. And like, you know, to continue the A student, and now like the saying is, the C student, the A students end up working for the C students. And that's how it,
that's so true. You know, so true. Some people are going to get pissed at what we're saying here. Just saying.
Hey, it's not the first time we upset anybody.
You know what? You know what though? They're going to stay pissed because they're not going to do anything about it. They're going to bitch.
Oh, they won't watch us. They won't watch us anyway. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter.
They're going to go back to their comfort, their pissed, you know, comfortable little themselves. Situation.
So you go from you go from being in sales and very successful too, by the way.
Thank you.
I think I looked something up here. I got it in my notes. 1,500 real estate transactions and what?
No, it's over that was now.
That was a while ago when you actually were able to say that. So, most salespeople struggle in leadership, right? It's not a natural progression to go from sales to leadership. But what made you know? What about what you learned made you like? You know what? I can do sales and I can do in leadership. And you're still selling, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I had a good year so far.
Tell me about your transition into leadership.
You know, I don't know if there was really a transition. I think you get to a point where, you kind of get put in that position in a way. I don't know if it was a transition. I think it's one. It's like anything. If you act like a leader, for some reason they'll call you that. Or if you believe in that, or if you embody leadership, that's what you're going to be. And I think also we surround ourselves with leaders. I mean, the people in our company, we call everybody that is under our umbrella a leader. They're all part of leadership. We don't believe in anybody really lower than us, or there's no totem pole. There's no point system. It doesn't matter who the owners are. I mean, yes, final say, it's our investment. But at the end of the day, you know, if I can get somebody that's a much better leader than me in another area, man, go for it. I mean, I love seeing that. You know, then I don't have to think about it. I don't have to do it. When we first started the company, you know, we were in charge of who was cleaning the bathroom. We were in charge of who was mowing the grass. We were in charge of all these different things. Now we have wonderful leaders in place. That, you know, kind of, and you think back, we're now 8 years, by the way, November 3rd, you know, whatever it was 8 years.
Congrats.
So it's 8 years that we've been around, and it's so interesting to see the leaders that we have now. We keep saying recently, the leaders we have right now are the best we've had since we started. And I think what that is we've gotten better at allowing that. You know what I'm saying? Like, we've gotten better at being open to leadership. Whereas in the beginning, we were controlling because that was all we knew, because that's what we did our whole lives. We were we had to control our business. We didn't have these people to help us out. So it's interesting to see. I think, you know, it's that whole when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. I think that's how it is with leadership. You know, when the student is ready, which would be us, you know, it appears. People appear around you, and you kind of, you're a magnet because people are into... They're into the fact that you're including them into your dream, but you still appreciate their dream. So there's a circle here, which is our dream, but their circle overlaps and comes into our circle, which is their dream. And we care about that. We care about their dream, care about their family, care about where they want to be in life. So that's kind of how, that was a long-winded explanation of how we transitioned into leadership.
It was awesome. And I love the Venn diagram analogy.
Yeah,
where dreams overlap, and I do think that that's where most leadership fails in organizations, especially in sales organizations, because you know not everybody's motivated by the same thing. So if you are managing or leading a group of salespeople, you have to know what is it they're in for, what's their why, like because the scoreboard might get me and Joe fired up. Right. Like that might just be like, we got enough money. Now what? Let's just try and, you know, play a scoreboard game. It's not the case with everybody.
Yeah.
Right. And a good leader is going to tap into, okay, what it is. First of all, care. right? A good leader is going to care. And I think a caring leader is attractive. And that's where, you know, and if you authentically care,
that's the key.
That's where the magnet part comes in. Yeah. I think if people see the energy, they see the authenticity. So, so important in all of this is that when they see the authenticity in your caring, they see the authenticity in your serving other people and in your goals to move forward, that attracts other people. It attracts people because they want to be around that. Just like you and I want to be around that always. I get attracted to somebody that I look at and go, wow, so authentic, so amazing. I've had some guests on the show that I've become friends with that like Sylvia DiGiusto. If you ever get a chance to look her up, I mention her all the time on my show. She's amazing. She was sat here in the studio. She's from Florida. And she's incredible. The energy she brought when she walked in our office doors to be on the show, there's an energy. There's a power. There's not a bad thing. There's just an energy that she brought in. She comes in the door, man. She just, not that she owns it, but she embodies the room. It's just amazing. And sits down, comes on the show. And we just had this like 45-minute conversation that was just unbelievable. And it could have just kept going. So that's the thing I think that people are looking for. And now I'm just like, I'm a good friend with her. And she's not here in the studio, but I keep pointing like she is. but no, we get attracted to that. You know, there's something fun about it.
One of the, we did a, do you know Ed Fordyce? Is that the name ring a bell?
I know the name. Yes.
Okay. Absolutely. So he and I did an event the other day and we, in talking about leadership, one of the concepts we drilled down on was, you know, first you have to lead yourself. Mm-hmm. And leading yourself, me management, whatever you want to call it, starts with, you know, what are the disciplines that you're enacting? What are the commitments that you're making to yourself that you're taking action towards? Mm-hmm. Where's the progress you're making in your life that's filling you up and making you happy? And what I've come to learn is that when I am working on myself in any capacity, but sometimes when I'm really digging in, whether it's health or whether it's, education or whether it's building systems or whether it's, you know, creating content, like whenever I'm really digging in on myself is when I find I'm attracting the most people. And it's almost like people just show up and you're not chasing. They're just showing up and they're showing up because when you lead yourself, then they know you're capable of leading them.
Yeah. Right.
Exactly. You know, Joe gets up at, all the discipline you have getting up in the morning and fighting and you're training for your jiu-jitsu and all that stuff.
Wait, what's he doing? What are you doing, Joe? He's not going to kick my ass after this, is he?
Only if you sign a waiver. Sign a waiver first. If you sign a waiver.
Yeah. No, so what do you? So well, let's talk about this. This sounds fun. What do you do?
So I've for the past several years, I train MMA, jiu-jitsu. I compete. I've had a couple fights in the past couple years. I'm actually competing. Little plug for me here. December
13th.
Great. Las Vegas Convention Center. I'll be competing in the World Championships for no-gi jiu-jitsu. So that's like jiu-jitsu, without the pajamas on jiu-jitsu.
Can you over 65 division, right?
Without the pajamas.
Yes, there's 18.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
I've never heard anybody say that before. Yep. Can you get me the information on that? That's awesome, man.
Yeah, it's live. Like you can watch
it on my socials.
Yeah.
It's pretty great.
But that keeps me. But so to Kenny's point, that's like, that's awesome. Really keeps me disciplined. I wake up at like 4:30 every morning. I go to the gym. I lift from 5 to 6, and I do cardio from 6 to 7, and then sauna. Then I come home and I do my work. I also have 5 kids. So, and then I train, I do all my MMA stuff at night from like 6 to 8 every single night. Then I go to bed. That's it.
That's crazy, man. But talk about dedication, commitment. That's incredible. So do you know Ed Mylett because of all this?
I don't know Ed Mylett. No, but I obviously know,
you know who he is, right?
Yeah.
I think he lives in California. He used to, but I listen to him almost every day. He's one of my mentors. He doesn't know he's my mentor. He doesn't know he's my mentor, but he is.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's very much into the MMA. He's into a lot of that stuff.
We have several similar friends. So we're in the same friend group. I just don't know him personally.
Yeah, it's cool, man. Very cool. That's so awesome. But, there you go. Sorry, I turned into a host.
No. This is a really good.
That's what I like. That's
a really good segue into what we were talking about as far as leaders. And
that's amazing.
So, for me, being a good leader, if you love what you're doing, you're naturally going to be able to lead people. So, for me, when I'm at the gym and guys are training and so forth, I am so excited to share my knowledge with people who aren't as experienced or whatever, and really just dig into it and as far as jiu-jitsu and stuff like that. And it's because I have a passion for it. And I think that leaders, if you have a passion for what you're doing career-wise in your job and your business or whatever, if you genuinely have a passion for it, that's gonna exude. But then you're also going to see that by developing someone else, a rising tide lifts all ships. So that coupled with to KJ's point, you really need to have an empathetic ear, and you have to really put yourself in the other person's shoes and be like, all right, what's in it for them? How can I help them? And then it all goes full circle, but it starts with the passion. You have to love what you do in order to lead well, because I've had situations where I hated what I did and I was a leader and I was a terrible leader. It's because I could care less. I was just passing time and I was trying to get everybody we should do it this way. And it's plain as day. I know people would look at me and be like, this guy does not give a shit about this company whatsoever.
Yeah.
So that's what it comes down to, I think, as far as the past.
You're right.
And
it's funny that you say that, I'm thinking about the 8 years of Keller Williams and this experience that I'm going through now with leading a company. And it's interesting. There were things I did in the beginning that I wouldn't do today as far as leadership goes, because it wasn't authentic. There were things that Keller Williams, nothing bad, but there were things that they would be like, well, you got to do this, this, and this. And I'd be like, all right, well, I guess this is what I got to do. And you just kind of do it because you're a leader at Keller Williams. And then you realize that nobody's buying this shit. You know what I mean? If Gary Keller says it, it's okay. Let him say it. Let him believe it. Let him have passion around that. But there's certain things that leader says that I can't buy into. It's just not me. So for me to take that message, bring it to here, and then try to sell that message, it's not authentic and it's not going to work. I need to be able to portray and sell and lead on a platform that is authentic for me. And in the beginning, it was very, very laborsome at times, because you're new in this. You're like, oh, I got to follow the franchises. What's a franchise is all about? A franchise does not mean, now if you're McDonald's, it's a little different, but a franchise does not mean, in a sales franchise, that you have to follow the leader 100% of how they do things. You won't be successful. In fact, that leader shouldn't ever want you to do that. Because if you're doing things exactly the way they are, what am I here for? Why am I even here? I'm here to spread the message, spread the success, spread the passion in my own way, not their way. So it is, when you said that, it really, it triggered something for me that I remember in the beginning I was doing. And it's interesting that it's funny when you have these conversations, you don't realize things sometimes until somebody says something and it triggers you to go, wonder where that happened in my life, or when was I like that? Yeah. So I appreciate the comments, Joe. Those are good things.
So Brad, would you say that to be a good leader, it takes a lot of balls, not so much balls?
Are you trying to say I have only one? Is that what you're trying to say? this whole time, all you're thinking about is my one testicle. That's 100%. All you're thinking about. Unbelievable.
You said something a minute ago that triggered a thought in my mind too, which is why I love these conversations. Honest to God, if there was no camera, no microphone, this would be, I would still have these conversations as often as anybody would let me. You said authenticity and that a good leader shouldn't be teaching people how to do it exactly the same way they do it, because they do it that way because that's how they do it. And a friend of mine, Sean Dominski, said to me the other day, and this is for the salespeople out there. This was great advice. He said, everybody's trying to find a niche. And he said, what we're finding in this day and age of where we are in real estate and in mortgage is that you are the niche. You're the niche, and nobody can recreate you. And if you put yourself out there, not just as, you know, hi, I want to give you a rate update today. My name is Ken Jordan. I'm a mortgage loan officer. And today's rates are 6 and 8%. Like, nobody cares about that. Yeah, but what they do care about is everything else that makes me who I am as a mortgage person and a father, as a mortgage person and a coach, as a mortgage person and a friend to, you know, Joe. Like, that's what people want to see. And that's how you build your brand and your niche. And really, nobody can recreate it.
Simply just come down to the fact that people will do business with people that they know, they like, and they trust. So if they get to know you and they like what they get to know, and then they trust you, there's no reason why they would do business with anyone else if you have a similar offering. And, you know, so that's part of the process of getting to know your customers and letting them get to know you. And same goes with like your employees.
Getting to know you, you got to open the door. You got to pull back the curtain a little bit and show them who you are as a person.
And that's the biggest, that's a huge pitfall too, because people, it drives me nuts when people try to be like too professional, you know, and are like, they come off, you talk to them, you have a conversation with them like we're having right now. And then all of a sudden you hear them get on the phone and you're like, dude, like, why did you just change up your tone completely? Like, just call like that's a person. Like, go talk to the human being like you're a human being. And I guarantee you you're going to get much further. And then open up your life. Let people know who you are. That's like, that's how they relate, you know?
Yeah.
So in this day and age of AI content creation, the ability to be yourself and let people in and pull back the curtain and be on camera, which is important. That's the antidote. That's the antidote, because you see all these AI LinkedIn posts and these AI Facebook posts and all the double hashes and the emojis, and you know they didn't write that shit. And if I was reading a teleprompter as I was talking, you would know I didn't think that shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So, like, all part of being yourself in the space of where we are with AI.
Yeah, and I think that's actually gonna. I think AI is actually gonna be the reason that the human touch really, really, really starts to take off again. I really do. I think that's gonna be the reason, because people are gonna be really tuned in. They're gonna be really tuned into like what you're saying, to find out if it is AI, or reading what you're typing to see if it's AI. You know, that the lady I said it before, Sylvie, she sent something to me that was really, really cool. That's the difference between AI and human beings. And it was really, this is one that I like to use a lot. So a robot or AI, a robot can look at a person that is crying, right? And they can say, that's a tear. They must be sad, because tears come from sadness or whatever. The difference between the human and that is that the human being looks at the tear and feels it.
Mm.
Feels the tear. They feel the sadness. They actually might start crying with that person, because we tend to feel. I just got chills again. Every time I say it, it's an amazing thing about emotion, about who we are compared to AI. Is that, yes, a robot is always can, yes, identify the tear, but they cannot feel it.
It could be tears of joy.
It's like the cry. What's that?
Could be tears of joy. Might not be.
Could be tears of joy. It just depends. But the human being, that the person on the side of that is going to see that. They're going to feel that if it's a sad situation, they're going to feel that tear, and they're going to go, oh, my God. Now they feel sad. Kind of how when somebody yawns, we yawn. We tend to, humans feel it, no matter whether we like it or not. When another person does something, we take it on. We're all one. We're all together. It's all one big energy that's happening. And I just thought that was really cool. And going back, I really think that AI is going to boost how much we are going to love human interaction. I think it got away from us for a while, and I think it's coming back.
There was a time where IQ was highly valued and still is. And then TQ, the technical quotient, you know, through the computer revolution, TQ became like the most important thing. You could be an asshole like Steve Jobs and still be incredibly successful because of his technical ability, his technical quotient. But here we are in 2025 going into the AI revolution, and it's going to be EQ that the people with high EQ are going to be the ones that are game changers in society and in business.
It goes back to what you're saying about niche and like differentiating yourself. So like when we were at Yellow Book, right, everyone was going door to door, and we would call first. We did like telemark. We would call the business and be like, hey, like, and we crushed it. Fast forward a couple of years, everyone started calling. No one went door to door. If you go door to door, and the business is like, oh, wow, you're like the first person we've seen in a month, as opposed to, and then they get 8 million robocalls. And then same with emails, like email blasts would go out. The first couple email blasts were working, and then they weren't working, and then it was text. So it's always like if you revert back to the opposite, and I think to your point, what AI is going to do is like people are going to love authenticity and mistakes, human nature, human mistakes, and say, okay, this is a real person. I can feel their emotion. I make mistakes too.
Dude, I'm not... if misspelling my words is a superpower, I'm way ahead of my time, man.
It's going to be a good year.
One of my Facebook posts.
My wife could tell me about then and then. Then and then, I'm just terrible with.
That's nothing.
My wife's a teacher. So she'll be like, it's then is for this, and then is when you use this. And I'm like, you know what? Does it really matter?
I get hung up on the there, and there. I'm kind of a grammar.
I'll tell you. There's picture the I in T-H-E-I-R. The I, turn the I into a stick figure, and that means it's the person there, not the place there. Oh.
I also recently learned that there's a subtle yet important difference between peeing in the pool and peeing into the pool. So,
what is the difference? I'm trying to see here. What's the difference?
Angry.
Everybody sees their parts. Now, what if you have one testicle? What happens then? See, you don't even know.
We feel bad for you.
We feel bad for you. Well, you don't float as well. That's the problem.
I want to get to the podcast because that was a big and we got kind of like into some really good stuff. But a big part of our show today is I wanted to ask you about your podcast. I mean, obviously, it's someone who, you know, Joe and I, we have fun with this podcast. But you know, you're really, really doing a fantastic job. And I feel like you've got some momentum and some real gravity. You're getting some guests from all over the country. I've been to your studio. It looks awesome.
That's right. You were here. That's right.
Yeah. I was there. The Get Shit Done Coffee guy. You told me that story.
Yes. Yeah, the Get Shit Done guy. Frank Sell. Love him. He's a good guy.
What made you get into podcasting? Same as us?
Yeah, was it? Did you guys get in because of COVID, or is that, or no? I did podcasting years ago. I started doing podcasting back in 2010, maybe 11.
Really?
And it was when podcasting, I wasn't the one doing it or in charge of it. I would just became like a consistent guest, and so I loved it. I didn't understand who was listening to it in the beginning. I was like, well, "Where is this going? Like, how is this even?" You know, because I wasn't really in that thing yet. And then later on, I got on a podcast as a consistent person, as a one of the hosts. And we were just doing like current event stuff, and we would do it from a hotel, actually. But it was video, audio, the whole thing. And then I wasn't happy with the quality of all the audio and video of that. And it was also because there was a limited budget, not that I have an unlimited budget. But so then I always wanted to do my own, just my own podcast, nobody else, just me, you know. So during COVID, I said to my wife, I said, I'm going nuts. This is like, you know, we're like 1 week after we're closed and I'm going nuts. I'm like, I have nothing to do. What am I going to do? She's like, well, just relax, read a book, you know, all this different stuff. I'm like, I can't, I got to do something. So I said, you want to start my own podcast? She goes, well, what's that going to cost? I'm like, let me look it up. So I looked it up. I said, it's going to be like $1,500. She goes, you're going to spend $1,500 when we don't even know when your next commission check is going
to
come.
Yeah, you guys, real estate agents were not allowed to operate.
No, we couldn't sell any. We couldn't do anything. We weren't even allowed to like open our eyes and look at a customer. I mean, it was like you weren't even allowed to do anything. So, you know, she goes, I don't really think it's a good idea. I said, you know what? You're right. It's probably not a good idea to spend the money. Well, 10 days later, the podcast equipment showed up. So I just kind of went and did it off on a whim. And she's like, what's that? And I'm like, it's the podcast equipment we talked about. She goes, I thought we decided not to do it. I said, no, I don't think we did. I don't think we decided that. You might have decided that. But, you know, so that was it. It started there. And it was just this, you know, my mixer, this here, and my computer. And I was at my desk at home. It was nothing pretty. It was just audio. And then it went from one thing to the next. And, you know, I'm one of those that's like, I'm always thinking of ideas and things that I want to do to make things better, especially when it comes to the entertainment field. I'm always wanting to be better. I want it to be, you know, better cameras, better microphone, everything. And that's basically the studio just kept becoming more and more me of what I envisioned that the studio should look like. And then just the quality of the guests, you know, the more you do it, I'm on show 260, 258, something like that. I'm recording tomorrow. So, you know, it's one of those things where it just keeps growing, keeps getting better. And I'm getting better as a host. The guests are getting better. Because, you know, the quality of who comes to me is getting better. So it's just good. It's just fun. A lot of fun.
If you had advice for two knucklehead podcasters, what advice to grow their audience? What's the best advice you would give?
Consistency, curiosity, and authenticity. The curiosity is in the guest, obviously. That's the one thing that I've had from the whole thing. I've always had curious. I've always had very authentic curiosity, if you want to call it that. When I'm asking a question, it's a conversation, and I'm discovering, as part of what's in my book, is I call it, when you meet somebody, you say hi, whatever, hello. Could be like in the airport, whatever. That's a meet. I like to discover people. So this is one of the things I'm building relationships that's going to be in my book, is that when they're over here in this seat, I'm discovering them. I'm going through a discovery process. That's not for me. It's for the audience. It's for me too, but it's just, I just want to know who they are, why they're there like this. And then, you know, they'll mention something else. And then that's curious to me. I've always been a very curious kid when I was younger. I wanted to know everything about everything. And my son's kind of the same way in that. And you know, some people be like, well, what does it mean? I'm like, because I'm curious. I mean, I want to, if you're a brain surgeon, I want to know, what does it look like when you cut the thing open? How much blood comes out? You know, what's the skull like? Do you use actually Stanley tools? Do you use this? That's how I am about anything or anybody that comes in here. I'm curious. And I think a lot of people in the audience are curious too. They just don't have they don't ask the questions, you know? Don't be afraid to ask questions. You guys are doing a great job, by the way. I mean, you're asking great questions. You're, but we're not there. You have bullet points, which is what I do. Mm-hmm. I always have bullet points. So the bullet points are always right here at my computer, and those are there in case I have a brain fade. Okay, that's really all it's there for. I really hardly ever finish the bullets. I might start with one of them. I might circle one. I want to make sure I definitely cover like the two facts and a lie or whatever thing. That's something you want to do. So that's really the advice I would give, is make sure you're doing something. And that's also why it's not about real estate only anymore. It used to be about real estate only. Then it started branching out. And the reality is this. I can't be curious about real estate as much as I used to be. I just can't. I've done it for 33 years. Am I still curious about the market at any given moment? Absolutely. And we'll talk about that once a month on the show I do with Pete. But I needed to really, really spread out the guests, the type of guests, just because I got to stay curious. If I don't stay curious, then the show is no good.
I
love that.
From what I've listened to you and some of the podcasts I've listened to, the best advice I was given was the listeners. If you're a good host, the listeners will learn more about your guests than what you know about your guests. Like, one of the things I struggle with is the platform in and of itself is not here for me. It's not here for me to show everybody how much I know about a particular topic. And sometimes in an attempt to find common ground, one of my weaknesses sometimes is in an attempt to find common ground, like, you'll say, oh yeah, and I agree, or I disagree, or, you know, I did this too. And like, and it's not about me. It's not about Joe. It's about the person here. Except for, we're pretty funny, and we always got to work those angles.
Which is cool. And actually, humor is huge. You know, if you ever watch any of my shows, I mean, I'm serious when it needs to be serious, but I also will throw in, you know, cracks and things like that, because that's the levity is what's important too, is that, you know, nobody wants to listen to a serious freaking show for 35, 40, 45 minutes, especially if you're talking about real estate or mortgages. I mean, who the hell wants to listen to that for 45 minutes? I mean, we don't. You and I, we don't have that.
We've never talked about mortgages once on this show.
Yeah, isn't that wonderful? And that's actually what I love. And also, too, I got to tell you, Ken, don't be afraid, though, and this is just my opinion, if you have a guest on and you're talking about mortgages, you do have a lot to offer because that's what you do. So when the difference with me, with my guests sometimes, that they're not doing real estate all the time, is that it's a doctor, or whether it's, you know, whoever that comes in, a guy that makes mustard, or a person that wrote the latest book that I was interested in, you know, then yes, I don't have as much to say because it's not my book. It's not my mustard. It's not mine. But when Pete is on, you know, when Pete's on, we share the airtime very much. Now, Pete is a consistent guest. But I don't think there's anything wrong with, instead of, like in my situation, if it's, you know, that doesn't sound good. The guy's looking at my butt. No, that wouldn't be oncologist. That's the other one.
Yeah, two different colleges. Yeah,
you're like, do you want to tell us something? But no, when the guy comes in, like who's like the doctor comes in here, Nate Tiedegen comes in. You know, he's talking about shoulder reversals and replacements. I have zero to say, but I make an ass out of him while he's here. You know what I mean? And he loves it. He laughs his ass. And it's a fun show. We really have fun with it because I'm asking the questions that nobody else ever asks. Yeah. They'll be like, oh, you're the orthopedic surgeon. They'll be like, oh, you're an ortho. Yeah. I'm like, dude, what's it like to, do you actually saw? I actually said, what tools do you use? Bring them in. I want to see them. You know what I mean? I want to see how the hell you cut bone. I want to know this, you know? So those are the things that are fun.
We're having a good time with it, and I have a good time listening to your show. For anyone that your shows are great too. They're not like crazy long. They're quick hits, but they're really, really good. The Brad Weissman show, From Real Estate to Real Life and Everything in Between. Check it out, and people can find it on YouTube. They can find it on Spotify. They can find it on Apple Podcasts. They pretty much find it anywhere, right?
Yeah, absolutely. If you type in The Brad Weissman Show or just Brad Weissman, as long as you spell Weissman correctly, Weissman, if you spell that correctly.
Turn the I into a person.
Oh, for Christ's sake.
I still don't understand what that means, bro. What does that mean?
If you're saying it belongs to them and it's theirs, that's a person. Turn the I into a stick figure of a person. If it's there,
it's
then
possessive. It's they call it possessive, is what it is. So when you say their house, EIR because it's a possessive. It's something correct. They own. You're never going to remember. Just like I remember then. I never remember.
I still struggle with that one too.
Oh, that, forget it, dude. I have to Google it every friggin' time. I'm like, okay. And somebody will say, well, the principal is your pal. I'm like, the principal is never my pal. He was never my pal.
That's what I get to
know. Let's just get that out of here right away. But so, all right. So he has to answer the question, doesn't he?
What's that?
The fact,
part of the show.
All right. So holy crap.
Two truths and a lie. I have them right here. Was at the Super Bowl. Met Carly Simon, I like that one, and born with one testicle. Joe, I'm not dropping any hints.
All right, hold on a second.
This is that. Hold on, before I guess, we're not going to require you to prove any of these statements.
All
okay?
right, well, I'm ready to do it, buddy.
Carly Simon's under the desk right now. Yeah.
Okay, we're on
it's
the
like
honest.
Trash bag. It's like a trash bag with a baseball in it. That's all I can say.
What do you think's the lie?
I'm trying to give you a visual.
Okay. So, given your high stature in real estate, I know that for like prizes and contests, Super Bowl tickets and are usually pretty common. So I believe you've been to a Super Bowl. Given that our own Philadelphia Eagles are current world champions and they've been to the Super Bowl multiple times, I think that it's that one most likely true. Carly Simon, you sold that one pretty hard. You sold that one like you were searching for it. I think that was an oversell. So thankfully, I do believe that you have two perfectly fine working testicles and you were not born with one testicle. So I believe that is the lie.
You're saying that the guy came into this show and he's like, I'm going to lie about having a testicle?
It was either that or a glass eye. I was thinking of either one this morning because I have a lazy eye that sometimes looks like it's a glass eye. So I was thinking this morning, I'm brushing my teeth. I'm like, either one testicle or a glass eye. I'm like,
wait, back up. You're saying that was the lie?
The lie was the one test. I don't have one testicle. I have two. Isn't that what you said?
I thought it was true. I was like, I actually felt bad making fun of you for it.
No, that was the lie. I have two testicles. Here, I'll show you. Should we make the sound?
If I could get Dave Cooley to put a little blur there just for the fun of it, that would be
awesome. Oh, my God. No, that was good, dude. You know what's funny? I was at a Super Bowl, but not the Eagles. It was in 1998. I went there because one of my good friends works for NFL Films. And I went to, I think it was 98 or 97. It was the Packers and the Patriots in New Orleans.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was why I went. And I actually got to see James Brown when I was there. I had all access passes. So wow. I could go anywhere in the stadium except for the field. That's the only place.
Was that Brett Favre's only Super Bowl win?
What's that? No.
Was it, you said Packers, Patriots?
That was, I think, yeah, the Packers. Did the Packers win? I can't remember anymore.
No, I think the Patriots won. Brett Favre was in the early 2000s is when he won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I remember a bunch of pissed off cheeseheads. So it's probably.
Yeah. Well, good for them. We just beat them.
We did. Yes, we did.
And Carly Simon, how did that happen?
I did meet her. I met her in a studio. I was doing some studio work up in New York City. I was recording in Studio B, and she was in Studio A at the same studio. And she came. I saw this an acoustic guitar that was on the ground outside of Studio A, and it was me and a bunch of buddies and working on music. And I see the tag on it says James Taylor. And I'm like, oh, my God, James Taylor's here. James Taylor's here, right? This is unbelievable. It's going to be great. So next thing you know, I see this lady with this huge mouth who is she's got a very large mouth. But very, she was very attractive and very, very kind. She was smoking a big brown cigarette. And I'll never forget. And she's like, hi, how are you guys doing? She very, very pleasant. I said, I noticed that your guitar has James Taylor on it. She goes, well, that's my ex-husband. And he gave it to me as a gift. And he left his tag on there. And I'm like, oh my! And yeah, she was. She was married to James Taylor. Yeah. She was married to. And it was just cool. She was really kind. She actually brought us into her studio where she was at. I'm not kidding you. There was an ashtray where she was singing that was filled with brown cigarettes.
Wow.
I think she's still alive too.
So yeah. Did you take your Learjet to Nova Scotia after that?
Yes.
Session?
Yes. Of course. Yes, I did. Yes.
All right. Didn't she write that? I bet you think the song's about you. What's the name of that song?
Yeah. You're
so vain. You're that's so her, vain. Man. She wrote a bunch of songs for people also.
Yes.
A lot of songs. In fact, I think she helped out. James Taylor and her co-wrote some stuff that you wouldn't even know that she was on it also.
There was some scandal too because it was like she wrote something for like somebody that maybe James Taylor was having an affair with or something. There was something that might not be right, but
I'll have to look that up.
I remember seeing a documentary on it.
Yeah, Brad, cool. Before we let you go, you got to go. Is there any way you get that picture off the wall to show Joe?
Hold on one second. Hold on.
Joe, you got to see this picture. This is from when Brad was balling, you know?
Okay.
You know, this was his heyday. Like, picture peak Joe Iredell, 2022 State College.
Come on, bro.
Look at that picture, man.
What world?
Up top.
Dude.
If you're listening to the show on Spotify,
you gotta
go to the YouTube channel and check this out.
That's what you call a panty dropper right there.
Yeah. Dude, you have no idea. There's still panties in the back of this thing.
My goodness gracious. It looks like in excess.
What's that? Yeah, well, yeah, it was more, you know, Bon Jovi was big, you know, and that's what that's kind of where we all kind of went towards. It was the glam rock, you know. It was Poison. It was Bon Jovi. It was everybody had the big hair and wore makeup. And you know, it was just, that was part of the whole thing. It was fun. A lot of fun.
That's amazing.
Crazy. Yeah, well, this was a lot of fun, and I bet you think this show was about you, Brad, but it's not. All right. No, but thank you for hanging out with us today. This was a lot of fun. Hopefully, you'll be back. We'd love to have you back.
Yeah, sure.
And hopefully, we'll be able to get together soon. And if you see my boy Scott Bailey, tell him keep his mouth shut. All right.
Okay, I will. Absolutely, I'll tell him that.
Thanks for listening to Selling the Dream. We know you don't want to miss a single episode, so go subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts. And then make sure to share the show with your friends and leave us a review.